Packers fans, welcome into the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined today by Ryan Wood, our colleague Tom Silverstein, not with us this week, but excited to have Ryan and I here for you. Let's all take a moment to wish Ryan a belated happy birthday.
Thank you. It's good to see you out there. Yeah.
A lot of fun. As we said earlier, we're not in our 20s anymore, but a lot of fun celebrating.
It hits you harder at 36, let me tell you.
Oh, that's more fun to look forward to. Yeah.
Yes.
Makes it fun to come home, though. Anyways.
It does. Yeah. I'm in bed. This is what I need for my birthday.
Happy belated happy birthday, Ryan.
Thank you.
Got a little bit of a break here from the Packers. They probably did that so you could celebrate your birthday before the OTA start and guys return for OTAs, which I believe started on the 22nd, if I'm thinking correctly.
Yeah.
But we are about a week out now from rookie minicamp. We had a couple of days to see this massive rookie class. 13 rookies drafted by the Packers. I want to say they had like 40-something there total during rookie minicamp between draftees, and then they had 14 tryout players, some guys from last year that, you know, didn't have experience, like Danny Etling, Tyler Goodson, those sort of guys that were here for rookie minicamp as well. We can get into some of the nitty-gritty of them, but first, just your overall impression of this rookie class initially from rookie minicamp, and I know there's not a lot you can tell, but just your first impressions of this class.
Yeah, you know, the important caveat first that I say every year is that they're not in pads. And all the way through OTAs, until the third day of training camp where they strap the pads up, it's not football. It's athletes in shorts. I will say, though, you know, this is our first chance to see them on the field and to get the eyeball test and not just see them as, you know, height, weight, speed on paper. And the tight ends really stood out. Luke Musgrave and Tyler Kraft. It's been a minute since the Packers have had tight ends built like this from a height, weight, and speed, fluidity, mobility, athleticism standpoint. Cassie, the thing that stood out to me is that they're built differently. You know, Luke Musgrave has the reputation to be that athletic move tight end, the receiver in the pass game. And he's taller than Tyler than Tyler Kraft. He's leaner than Tyler Kraft. You know, he looks like a move tight end. Tyler Kraft has come in with more of that complete tight end, a real rugged blocker. He can move too, but he's kind of your inline guy that can just maul over defenders. And he's built stocky. He's got good height. He's 6'4", 6'5". He's got good height, not 6'6", like Luke Musgrave. But Tyler Kraft's got some pipes. I mean, he's you know, you can see once they strap the pads on, he's built like a guy that can block as well. Not saying Luke Musgrave can't, but the different builds, and they're both impressively built, but the different builds with these two tight ends definitely stood out to me.
Yeah, I think when you look at the two of them, and especially how – and again, it was just rookie minicamp, but when you saw how they were lining them up together, oftentimes bunching them, putting one with their hand in the ground, the other standing up right on his hip, it's going to be interesting to see how they use these two. And again, we're probably getting too far ahead of ourselves, but having these two sort of tight ends and what they're capable of doing, is it fair to say that's what Matt LaFleur's offense needs? And
it's what it's been missing. Yeah, it's what it's been missing. I think you're going to see a lot of 12 personnel. We know about Matt LaFleur that he's very multiple in his scheme. He loves tight ends. I mean, look how much use he got out of Mercedes Lewis at the end of his career. Almost 40-year-old tight end who played 400-plus snaps. There's a reason for that. That's what Matt LaFleur's scheme is designed for. It's designed to use tight ends. So I think you're going to see a lot of them on the field at the same time. And yes, we are very early, but with Jaden Reed, the second round receiver, he's going to learn all the positions. That's what the Packers do. They cross train every receiver. They make sure every receiver knows every position that a receiver can line up in. But it's pretty easy. I know we talked about this. It's pretty easy to see Jaden Reed kind of develop into not just the slot receiver, which he's played a lot at Michigan State, but also that pre-snap motion jet sweep guy. Right. You know, that's another position that Matt LaFleur's scheme, his playbook requires and needs. And Jaden Reed is, you know, we saw him do quite a bit of that for just rookie minicamp. Again, he's going to learn the outside perimeter stuff. He's going to learn it all, just like Christian Watts and just like Romeo Doubs. They learned all the positions. But when they go 11 personnel, it's pretty easy to see Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs on the two outsides predominantly and Jaden Reed in the slot predominantly. So they've got a young core there between the receivers and the tight ends to really grow with Jordan Love. And that's where this team is now. It's a developmental team on offense. They've got Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon to carry the load in the run game, the two veteran guys in the backfield. But from a passing game standpoint, very young, very developmental, and that's what the season's going to be.
Jaden Reed's fast, too.
He's got, you know, he
blazed past me at one point. I was like, whoa, what was that? And it's Jaden Reed.
That's what rookie minicamp's good for, is you get a good sense. Now, there's speed in shorts and their speed in pads. And when the pads come on, the play speed is what's going to ultimately be most important for young guys, especially in receiver position. It's not an easy transition from college to the NFL. There's going to be a lot to learn that initially is probably going to impact that play speed. So how quickly Jaden Reed can learn the playbook. And, you know, I talked to him in the locker room. I think the first day that they opened up the locker room for rookie minicamp, and he said that right as soon as he got off the phone with Jordan Love, and Jordan Love sent either phone calls or text message to just about every offensive rookie that was drafted, just welcoming him. This is part of Jordan Love's new role as the leader, as the quarterback, by definition, a leader. As soon as he got off the phone, he was looking up YouTube clips of Jordan Love, and he was getting, he said he was creeping on his new quarterback. He's getting a feel for his new quarterback. So how quickly Jaden Reed, Luke Musgrave, Tyler Kraft, how quickly they can acclimate to this offense is ultimately going to determine how their play speed looks once training camp comes around and they're in the pads. But it's going to be a very busy offseason in spring for all these players.
Jordan Love made a really good point when he talked to us a few days ago. That's something else that's happened recently. Jordan Love officially held his first press conference as QB1 of the Green Bay Packers. He made a comment that, you know, it can be more difficult when you're all young, but that there's a lot of positives in that as well about how you can essentially grow together. You're not trying to, and what I took from that was you're not trying to insert a bunch of different pieces at different stages in their career. You're putting guys that can sort of go through the fire together and learn at the same, most likely, trajectory. I mean, with that being said, this first year is probably going to be a little rough, but how exciting is that to know you've got a young core group?
The Packers, I think, are very excited, and they should be. Now, we've said it before, they have no idea what to expect from this new quarterback, but they're excited to find out. The thing that stood out to me, and it was subtle, it wasn't kind of a wow moment, but it just – you know, Jordan Love's not new. He's been here for 3 years. We've all talked to him before, but never in this capacity, never as QB1. And the thing that stood out to me about being in this role for the first time is when he said, having the guys see it the way that he sees it and bringing them along to see the field the same way as him. And that's important because when you're QB1, it doesn't matter if you're first year starter, it doesn't matter if you're four-time MVP. If you're QB1, it matters that everyone around you sees the defense the same as you, the playbook, the field, not just the playbook on what's written on paper, but your extension rules when plays break down. Everyone around you sees the game the same as you do. And for him to verbalize that, he's right. It is going to be important that everyone sees it the same as him. And it is on him to bring them along to make sure that they're on the same page there. So, you know, there's been a switch that's flipped for Jordan Love. He said that he's treated this entire offseason from the very beginning of the offseason, before the trade, before the announcement from Aaron Rodgers and Pat McAfee, that he is going to be QB1. He's treated the entire offseason that way. What he does from now to September is ultimately going to depend on, you know, determine whether he's successful with that. But he spoke like a QB1.
With that in mind, what I took away most from Jordan Love's press conference, Ryan, I would not have been surprised. I would have expected him to be a little nervous, a little cautious, maybe with some of the things he said or how he acted. That would have been to be expected for the first time stepping behind a podium as QB1 for the Packers. He was confident. He was confident. I said that twice. That's how incompetent he was. He was comfortable. He wasn't flustered. He was candid, which was very refreshing. You know, he admitted that last year when Rodgers signed that new deal, that was a really doubtful time for him. You know, we always talk about like new head coaches, like if they win the opening press conference. That's not to say what Jordan Love will or won't do on the field, but that was a much more confident and comfortable guy behind that podium the other day than I expected.
I had the same thought as you as I was writing the stories. He won this press conference. He did. That was a good opening press conference for him as QB1. Now, it doesn't matter at all if he doesn't have to carry the same confidence onto the field this fall. Right. That's the job. He's got to handle the snaps just as well as he handled the podium. But if he does, they're in good hands because he handled the podium quite well. And that was a good start for him, which is not nothing. It's important. When you're quarterback, you're wearing all the hats. Right. It's not just how you play. It's how you carry yourself. It's how you lead. It's the influence you have in the locker room. All these things are going to be new for him. You know, Aaron Jones, it was interesting. We've talked about this before Aaron Jones said this, but the respect level that his teammates seem to have for him has been earned because for 3 years, Jordan Love has had a pretty difficult job. The job has been be quiet, don't rock the boat, walk on eggshells, be a backup quarterback. And he's handled that definitely. And it's not been easy. As Kenny Clark said, Kenny Clark's a first-round pick, 2016. He couldn't imagine being in Jordan Love's shoes where you're a first-round pick and then you don't do anything for 3 years. That's not easy. It's a tough job. And he handled that well. So Aaron Jones said that the respect level is because of how hard he's worked in the quiet and how much he's done behind the scenes to prepare himself, never causing a distraction, always being present, always trying to develop, even when he knew it might not lead to a job with the Packers. Who knows what happens with Aaron Rodgers? That's earned a lot of respect, a lot of cachet with his teammates. Now he's got to put it on the field. That's going to be ultimately what matters.
And to your point about wearing a lot of hats, there's something to be said about, yes, you have to do it on the field, but there's something to be said about how all of those off the field responsibilities can sometimes weigh a young guy down and it comes out on the field. And so if that's less of a weight, it can help him possibly be a little bit more free on the field as a young guy. But we're putting a lot of weight behind that opening press conference, but he did handle it. He did handle it very, very well. You mentioned Kenny Clark being a first-round pick, so that's going to be my transition here because we did get a little away from rookie minicamp, but I wanted to talk about that Jordan Love press conference. Kenny Clark's a first-round pick with Lucas Van Ness. I added him up the other day. They have 8 first-round picks on this defense now. Expectations are always going to be high for an NFL team, but I feel like they should – be through the roof for this defense, but that's been the case for years. Is 8 first round picks that different from 7 first round picks, which is what they were playing with last year? Is Lucas Van Ness someone you can see fitting in right away now that you've seen him in person, you've seen his frame, you've seen his build? Is he someone you can see fitting in right away while they still sort of wait for Rashawn Gary to fully recover? And how high are the expectations for this defense?
Well, they should be very high. I mean, I think that they've been tempered by the fact that last year the expectations couldn't have been higher and they just didn't come close to meeting them, and now they're running it back. On paper, this is an extremely talented, high-profile defense at every position. I mean, what who are the three non-first round picks? I mean, Rasul Douglas,
Keyshawn
Nixon, Devondre
Campbell. And some of them, like, I don't know if they would, like, I don't know if Van Ness was going to start. So can you say eight starters? And, you know, you're going to have to wait for Eric Stokes to get back.
The point is, even the non-first round picks are damn good players. Right. I mean, we're talking, you know, Devondre Campbell's not a first round pick. He's one of the three, right? He was an all pro.
Rasul Douglas is
a ball hawk. Maybe it's Jonathan Knowles. I know we'll talk about him a little bit later. But whoever starts at safety alongside Darnell Savage, that won't be a first-round pick. But even the non-first-round picks are good players. So the expectations should be high. Just because last year wasn't met doesn't mean that you lower the expectations for what this defense is on paper. And what this defense is on paper is very, very talented. It's Joe Barry's job to bring out the talent. It's his job to be flexible with his scheme week to week, which is how this league works, so that you are matching up against the opposing offense to your best capability. And there's a blend between doing what works well for you and being true to your strengths while being flexible to, hey, you know what? The other team's got Justin Jefferson.
Yeah.
You got Jair Alexander. Go match. That's what Joe Barry's job is. Yeah, you know, week five, Las Vegas Raiders, Davante Adams. If Jair Alexander's not matching Davante Adams, Joe Barry's not doing his job. That just has to happen. So, yeah, that's on him to bring out the talent. But as far as Lucas Van Ness goes, he didn't start a game at Iowa. We all know that. He's going to have every opportunity to have his first real start be in the NFL. Because as long as Rashawn Gary is not here, and you know, I don't know when he's going to return, but you just look at how the Packers handled ACL injuries last year, starting in Minnesota and not playing David Bakhtiari or Elgton Jenkins. Pretty easy for me to see them not wanting to trot Rashawn Gary out on the Soldier Field's grass. Right. It's pretty easy for me to see him not wanting to trot Rashawn Gary out week two in Atlanta inside, you know, field turf, inside a dome.
Yeah.
And if it is week three when he comes back against the Saints at home, it's going to take time for him to become Rashawn Gary again. And how long that takes, with ACLs, it might take a month before he's himself. So Lucas Van Ness is going to get every opportunity to start. And it's not going to, you know, he's going to develop just like any rookie over the course of early in your first season in the NFL. You're going to have a lot of development. That's what they need, but he's going to get every opportunity to get a lot of snaps.
Of course, Lucas Van Ness is the face of this draft class as the first round pick, but they really went hard after edge rushers top to bottom in this rookie class. Do we see a lot of rotation in that unit, do you think? And just to kind of see what they've got, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, Lucas Van Ness is the only pure edge rusher that they drafted. But in the fourth round, they drafted Colby Wooden, who is very versatile.
I meant to say pass rusher. That was my bad.
Yeah. Defensive front. So Lucas Van Ness is the only edge rusher, pure edge rusher that they drafted. But they really put some day three picks into some high potential guys, and Colby Wooden in the fourth round and Carl Brooks in the sixth round. And with how the defensive line is right now, it's pretty thin behind Kenny Clark, and Devontae Wyatt's going to get snaps, and TJ Slayton's going to get snaps. But it's a thin group after losing Dean Lowry and Jerron Reed in free agency. The rookies, they could factor into that rotation. So, yeah, I mean, they needed depth up front on their defense, and depth they got. So, how, you know, we talk about the offensive side, how quickly the tight ends, how quickly Jaden Reed can develop. It's very similar on the Packers defensive front. How quickly can they develop? And especially Lucas Van Ness, but even Colby Wooden and Carl Brooks, you could see them getting snaps to, you know, in a depth situation to develop early in their season.
When we were standing at rookie minicamp, I got a text from someone, and their first question was, is Lucas Van Ness as big as he seems? I'm trying to remember if he felt big to me. He felt like an edge rusher, or he looked like an edge rusher, but he didn't seem overtly big. Like like Preston Smith seems big. Did you get that sense from Van Ness? Maybe I just didn't spend enough time around him.
Lucas Van Ness is, you know, Preston Smith is tall and for his position a bit wiry. Lucas Van Ness is built more like Rashawn Gary, very stocky, broad shoulders. Showed some quickness. Again, short speed and pad speed are two totally different things. So we'll find out what his play speed is. And you know, the thing about Rashawn Gary, when he came in, it took time for Rashawn Gary to be able to dominate in 11-on-11 settings, but he dominated one-on-ones from the very start. He was not blockable in one-on-one pass rushing drills as a rookie. You could see the burst, the explosion, the get off. He had every athletic trait that you wanted. So for me, when they start going one-on-one drills in training camp, I'll be very curious to see what Lucas Van Ness looks like from a pad level play speed type.
While we're talking about the front seven, wanted to mention a cool roster addition the Packers got this year. They were able to allocated Kenneth, and I want to make sure I get his last name right, Udumego.
Sure.
he gave us a phonetic pronunciation of it. So
Odumagwe.
Yeah. On paper, he is a defensive end from Nigeria. That was the position given to him during a football camp in Nigeria about a year and a half ago. He has never played in a game of American football. He was big to me. Standing next to him in the locker room, I was like, that is a defensive end. Had to look up at him. Just a couple of logistics, in case you aren't sure. He was allocated to the Packers because the NFL does an international player pathway program, bringing in players from other countries a chance, an opportunity to get to know the game of NFL football, spend some time with teams during training camps and possibly during the season, and of course even given the chance to make the roster. He will be with the Packers through training camp for sure. He is awarded that much time. He also would be able to stay on the practice squad, and it would not count against the Packers' 16-man practice squad. They would be given a 17th spot for this international player. If the Packers wanted to elevate him to the active roster, they would have to nullify that international player pathway contract, sign him to a practice player contract, and then move him to the active roster. But when they do that, they lose that 17th spot. So if he came up to the active roster for game day and then, you know, reverted to the practice squad, which sometimes players do, or it would be to a 16th spot. That 17th spot would no longer exist. But I'm very interested to see more from him as we get into training camp, just because he is big. He would have what you would assume to be natural ability. How well does he take coaching? How well can he pick up on the nuances of this position? But I mean, Ryan, I wanted to get your opinion on Kenneth as well, but standing next to him, I was like, that's a defensive end.
To your point, you know, most players, American born football players, play themselves into a position. They start playing very young and they just, they find their position naturally on the field. With Kenneth Odemwale, he was given his position because of his size. And standing next to him, he is built exactly like an NFL edge rusher. That is how he's built. He's got the size, the build for that position. So he was given that position. It was jarring. I've never encountered this. I asked him, so when did you first start playing football? And he's like, I've never played organized football. Here he is standing in the middle of the Green Bay Packers locker room at Lambeau Field, and he's never played organized football. He's only done drills. Did it at the combine, did every drill that, you know, every other prospect does at the combine, but he's never played organized football. So we talk about raw all the time, right? Like
that is the definition of raw.
Yeah, you can say Lucas Van Ness 2 years late to play football because he's a hockey player, never started at Iowa. There's some rawness there, but he's played. He's played in the Big Ten. This is as raw as it gets, and it's going to be a lot of fun to see. You know, again, he is built like your prototypical NFL edge rusher. He has the build for that, but how quickly can he adjust to the game that he's never played before at this level? No college. It's going to be fascinating to watch. And the other thing with him, and this isn't rare, the rookie minicamp is the most pleasant conversations you're ever going to have in an NFL locker. Every single, I mean, Sean Clifford, he's got Aaron Rodgers' old locker, and he's just handling every question about this with grace and poise. And he's just, you know, I'm just happy to be here. Because they are. They're legitimately just happy to be here. They played 4-3 years of college football waiting to be here. And now they are. And everyone is smiling. Everyone's – but Kenneth Onuamagwe, he just – When you talk about happy to be there, he's looking around and he's just almost in shock. Like, oh my God, this is really cool. And it is really cool. You know, so it's going to be fun to watch him, you know, develop. And Matt LaFleur was asked, you know, have you ever had a situation like this with a player who's never played an organized down? He hasn't. This is new for him. So the coaching, how quickly he develops is going to be really fun to watch.
Yeah, it really will be. I'm excited for that one for sure. You also mentioned Sean Clifford. Let's touch on him for a second while we're still on minicamp. He seems very much to know his role. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you get these guys that are drafted and they're clearly drafted as the backup. They come in and they say, I'm going to push. I'm going to fight for a starting spot. And that's to be expected. They're a competitive nature. But Sean Clifford, whenever you pushed him on that, because even though he's technically a backup, Jordan Love has still never played. I mean, what if they get into – technically, you could get into training camp, but Sean Clifford could beat him out for the spot. But whenever you kind of push him on that, he stayed very steadfast. I know what I'm here to do. I'm here to support Jordan. I'm here to support Danny. I'm here to give whatever wisdom I can. After the draft, Brian Gutekunst and Matt LaFleur talked about Sean Clifford's locker room presence a lot, and how that was something that drew them to him. After seeing it in rookie minicamp, it makes sense. I see what they're talking about.
There's no question.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no question he's a good locker room fit. And to the point, you know, we talk about the tight ends, the you know, Jaden Reed, seeing – and even Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, seeing the field the same as Jordan Love. Sean Clifford said the same thing. As a backup – you want to see the game the same as the start so that when you're getting those reps, nothing changes. And that's important to Sean Clifford. From a locker room fit standpoint, no question that he's a good fit there. What he can do on the field, the upside, the arm, those are questions. And we'll see once, you know, once OTA start, but even more importantly, training camp, we'll see what he can do on the field. But yeah, they needed bodies in quarterback, and they had the run at quarterback. He was the 11th quarterback taken in the 5th round, which has only happened once, and they ended up setting a record for quarterbacks taken in a 7-round draft. They needed bodies, and they needed to get Sean Clifford in the 5th round when maybe they entered the draft thinking he'd be available in the 7th round. So does he play like 5th rounder? Does he play like a 7th rounder? Can he play higher than his draft status? We'll find those things out. But, yeah, from a fit standpoint – it's very easy to see him. Yeah, the other, you know, he's what, 8 months older than Jordan Love, which is kind of crazy since he's a rookie. Love's going into his 4th season. Jordan Love was really young when he got drafted. Sean Clifford said he doesn't look at it that way. The only age that he sees is that he's a rookie. And Jordan Love's going into his 4th season. He doesn't see himself as older than Jordan Love because he's the rookie. And so, you know, he played the part very well.
And he did it in Aaron Rodgers' old locker. He was giving that was something. Yeah.
When I walked in, that was the first thing because Aaron Rodgers' longtime locker is right to your immediate right when you walk into the locker room. And so as I walk in, I just look over my shoulder, Sean Clifford, it was like jarring. The other thing, too, that's kind of interesting, he's got Aaron Rodgers' same number. Now, Aaron Rodgers is 8. But not only Aaron Rodgers' longtime locker, but he's wearing 8 just like Aaron Rodgers is wearing now. So it's but it's kind of it was jarring to look up and not see 12 Rodgers in that locker and see 8 Clifford instead. That was just another reminder that things are a little different now, Green Bay.
Yeah. He said he was asked how many times he'd been told, and he was like, I don't even remember the number he said, but it was some astronomical number. That's everybody immediately, because you're right, like you said, it's a little jarring. when we were in rookie minicamp listening to he and Danny running the offense, I made a joke. It's like, I wonder if anyone would notice that it's Sean Clifford's voice instead of Jordan Love on our podcast. As many of you have pointed out, I want to say thank you for the tweets, the emails, the DMs. I've seen them all. We do know it is still Aaron Rodgers' voice on our intro and outro. Still waiting on getting a usable Jordan Love one. But Sean Clifford was loud in rookie minicamp and clear. And I thought that part was interesting that, you know, he mentioned many times, I'm here to back up Jordan. I'm here to back up Danny. But he almost had a little bit more control of that offense than even Danny Etling did.
He's played a lot of football
through rookie minicamp. That's the caveat, but still.
He's played a lot of football. What was he, a 4-year starter at Penn State? 3-year
starter. Beat out Will Levis.
Yeah, he's played a lot of football. So, you know, we'll see. It's just totally different game of the NFL. The windows, the throwing angles are entirely different. It requires an entirely different touch, arm strength, accuracy. That adjustment will be everything. Because at the end of the day, that position, nothing matters but can you throw the ball at this level? Can you hit the windows?
Before we look at the schedule, and I know that we're starting to inch up on our time here, but before we look at the schedule, one more thing on the field I want to look at. The Packers did sign a new safety this past week. Free agent Justin Owens, or as he is more commonly known, Mr. Simone Biles, married to the most decorated gymnast in Olympic American history, Simone Biles. So that could be fun, having that sort of star power around. But let's talk about what Owens signing does for this team and what that maybe means for Adrian Amos as well. Brian Gutekunst had left the door open on Adrian Amos and said, you know, we'll just kind of see where things stand after the season. But with the signing of Owens, it feels like that door is closed on Adrian Amos. Is that fair to say, Ryan?
I think they're looking at Adrian Amos probably very similar to how they look at Mason Crosby, which is, look, they're not a veteran kicker. They're not a veteran safety away from contention. This is a rebuilding year. It's a softer schedule, at least from the springtime outlook. It can always change in the fall. But on paper, in the spring, it doesn't look like a gauntlet of a schedule. It doesn't look like a very strong NFC North. So I'm not saying that they don't think that they can come in and compete, maybe win a division title. It wouldn't be shocking for that to happen with the way that the schedule lines up and the fact that it's just not a very high ceiling division that they're in. But you got the Eagles out there. You got the 49ers out there. There's some good teams in the NFC. They're just right now in 2023, not in the class of. They're not, you know, not when they're transitioning from a Hall of Fame quarterback to a first-time starter. You don't expect to be. They're not a veteran kicker or a veteran safety away from contending. So, you know, if they were, maybe Adrian Amos makes more sense, but they're not. So Jonathan Owens, 125 tackles last year, 4 passes defended, a sack, started 17 games for the Texans. It was the Texans. We'll see what he can do.
I wanted to bring up the 125 tackles because I feel like there needs to be a qualifier with that. That 125 tackles is impressive for a safety. He was playing in the third level behind the worst rushing defense in the league.
You would have a lot of tackles.
Guys were getting to that third level for him to tackle. So I feel like we have to remember that when kind of discussing what he can bring. But is that sort of just a – to your point, they're not a veteran safety away. Is he a good plug and play for a year? because this was a not a deep safety class in the draft.
For this team, he might be, you know. And tackle stats in general are just useless stats because it doesn't tell you how you tackle. If you plant a ball carrier on their rump and push them backwards, or if you get dragged for 5 yards, it's counted as a tackle all the same. And those are two entirely different tackles. So, and I haven't seen Jonathan Owens' film. I didn't watch the Houston Texans last year because I just wasn't going to do that to myself. So I haven't seen his film. I don't know which kind of tackler he is. It's just a number on paper. And to your point, Cassidy, you're absolutely right. He had a lot of opportunities in that defense. So, he very well might be a plug and play. There's clearly something the Packers like. Does he have upside there? We know he has good athletic numbers. Now, he doesn't have the same athletic numbers as his wife because Simone Biles is a boss. She is as athletic as any human on this earth. So, you know, we'll see how athletic when the pads come on Jonathan Owens is, but he might be a good plug and play option for this team, this roster, and what 2023 profiles to be.
I don't know if anybody has the athletic numbers of Simone Biles.
No, she's fun to watch, man. Do you think
she could do a Lambo leap in a single leap, even though she's only like smaller? She's shorter than 5 foot.
She'd clear the wall. She just completely. And that's anyone that's taken the Lambo tour gets a appreciation for what a Lambo leap is. That is not a short wall.
The wall is tall.
She'd clear the wall. She'd be like Superman in a single bound.
When she posted some pictures after he was signed and she posted pictures of them down on the field, that was the first thought I had, was like, I wonder if they let her try it. Because they don't let fans try it. But I was like, I wonder if they let Simone Biles try it.
I gotta see that video. I gotta see that video.
Right? Simone Biles, if you're listening, we want to see you do a Lambo leap.
Yes.
Please. For posterity. We just need
to put every Packers player to shame.
Yes. Put her out there during family night. You know how sometimes during family night, the scrimmage part of it, they like let old players come back? Put Simone Biles out there, throw her a pass, let her do a Lambo leap. I would love it. Yeah. Okay, Ryan, before we wrap up here, let's take a quick jaunt through the schedule. Let me pull up their schedule here for 2023. As you said, on paper right now in May, a very favorable schedule for the Packers and for Jordan Love in his first year. Let's just kind of walk through it here week by week real quick. They open 2 games on the road, but those 2 games are the Chicago Bears, and then they travel to Atlanta to take on the Red Stallions. Anyways, Justin.
I'm missing a joke here. Red Stallions.
Have you seen the Tennessee Titans? Did you see the Tennessee Titans
schedule? Oh, gosh, that was gold. Gold, Jerry. Oh, my goodness. That was one of the funniest videos I've seen in a long time.
It was so simple in its concept, and it was freaking hilarious. The best part was all the other teams that got in on it. The Falcons changed their Twitter name to the Red Stallions. The Colts changed their Twitter name to Not the Cowboys. The Miami Dolphins said that they would consider going in with the Falcons on creating like an expansion Atlanta, Florida Dolphins team. It's so funny. So if you haven't watched the Tennessee Titans schedule release video, take two minutes out of your day, go watch it. I don't want to give anything else away. It was hilarious. Point is, Love versus Fields in week one. That could be an exciting game to watch because Justin Fields has been playing for a couple of years, but I feel like he was getting shortchanged by his team in the first couple of years. What will the Bears be this year? Is there anything that we could maybe take from that week one game, Love versus Fields?
Well, I think what you take is this has the potential. We don't know, but this has the potential to be something that Aaron Rodgers never had. His entire career in the NFC North, there was never a fitting sparring partner. The closest that they ever came was Matthew Stafford. And being with the Lions, it just never materialized. Aaron Rodgers never had a rival. And Jordan Love, Justin Fields, has the potential to be an awfully fascinating rivalry. Bears, Packers, 2 young quarterbacks, 2 very athletic, dual threat type quarterbacks. And, you know, Jordan Love's not Justin Fields' athleticism, but we saw him last year make some plays out of the pocket. He's got that in his arsenal. And just the geography of it all, the history of it all. Not to mention, Aaron Rodgers owned the Bears. And so what better fit to start a new era, the Jordan Love era, than against the Bears in Chicago? It just from an NFL scheduling standpoint, it was perfect. And so, yeah, and I'll tell you, big picture view, I have no idea what to expect from the NFC North. You could talk me into any of the four teams winning the division, including the Packers.
Right.
I have no idea who's going to win the division. I'll tell you, I seem to be lower on the Detroit Lions than most people because, yeah, the Detroit Lions are better. But as I wrote about when I did the game-by-game predictions, since when does being better than terrible equate to unbeatable? Right. I feel like the Lions get judged through this prism of, like, they're the Lions. They're expected to be hot garbage every season because usually they are. And they're not going to be that this year, you don't think. But that doesn't mean that they're some juggernaut. It just means that they're not hot garbage. Like good for you. You've passed a very, very low bar historically. How good are they going to be? They might win the division. I don't know, but I think it's incredibly wide open. So I have the Packers splitting the six NFC North games, winning everyone at home, losing everyone on the road. Will it end up that way? Almost definitely not, because you just never know what happens in the fall. But that's I don't know what to expect from the NFC North. I think it's very, very competitive, very wide open.
I think they split them all as well, but I think I had them a little bit different than you did. I looked more at where the games fell week-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think I have them beating Detroit in Detroit because of where because of when the game is.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point, home field advantage could be a bigger deal there. Those opening two games do what?
Especially on Thanksgiving, you know, that'll be an interesting
short week.
First time in 10 years
that you've had to work on Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Well, not that, no, because 2015, the Packers hosted the Bears on Thanksgiving, and that might be the only one. I feel like there might have been another one. They've had more Christmas games, but it's the first time since 2013 that the Packers will be in Detroit on Thanksgiving. It was bound to happen. My first season on the beat was 2014. It's bound to happen at some point. A little surprise it took this long. That 2013 game started by Matt Flynn because Aaron Rodgers was out with the collarbone injury, and they lost 40-10 to the Lions. So I have them losing that game, but I can almost guarantee you it will not be 40-10.
So their first 3 weeks, they go to the Bears, they go to the Falcons, they come home versus the Saints. Ryan, call me crazy, but I see them coming out of that 3-game stretch 2-1.
Could happen. I have them 1-2. I have them losing in Chicago, winning in Atlanta, and then so much of this season is going to be not necessarily the opposing quarterback matchup. And obviously with the Saints week 3, that's Derek Carr. And who knows what to expect from Derek Carr. But so much of it's going to be Jordan Love against what defense. And that Saints defense is a top 10 defense. So I got them losing that game just because I think that that's from a defensive standpoint, that's a tough test. And Derek Carr can carry his water. I know that he was only a Pro Bowler in name only last year. He got benched for Jarrett Stidham. So he can carry his water. He's an improvement from what they've had at quarterback since Drew Brees.
Yeah. Then after that Saints game, they stay at home, but they have a short week. The first of 2 Thursday night games, which is something that teams can do this year because of the new rules. They can play multiple Thursday night games. They're not guaranteed a primetime game, but that ended up not being an issue because it's still the Green Bay Packers. How many primetime games did they receive?
5. They got their maximum allotment, which is the first thing that stood out to me, and I think everyone else when you saw this schedule is, as I wrote, the NFL schedule makers either missed the memo that Aaron Rodgers was no longer the Packers quarterback, or they just didn't care because the Packers are still a massive primetime draw. They got their maximum allotted 5. And that's, I don't know that I expected that to happen in the first season of Jordan Love.
Yeah. Because they ended up with 2 Thursday night games and 2 Monday night games. So they have that short week versus the Lions, but then they have almost like a mini bye because they go Thursday the 28th, Thursday, September 28th. They don't play again until Monday, October 9th. That game is in Las Vegas versus the Raiders. Primetime Monday night versus Devontae Adams, Jimmy Garoppolo. I chalked that game up very quickly as a loss for the Packers.
And that one doesn't have anything to do with Jordan Love. I'm just sitting here trying to out high enough to think of how many yards Devontae Adams is going to have on this Packers secondary. You imagine he's going to get up for that game.
Yeah, he definitely will. And I'm just interested to see what this offense looks like for the Raiders now, because and this is not to say that Jimmy Garoppolo is an improvement over Derek Carr. Talent-wise, I don't know if you could even make that argument, but he can run the offense that Josh McDaniels wants to run, which predicates itself on getting the ball to playmakers in space and then letting them get yards after the catch. Josh Jacobs and Devontae Adams can do that. So if Jimmy Garoppolo takes a 5-yard check down to Devontae Adams, he could turn that into a 40-yard house call. I just don't think that this Packers defense can stop that Raiders offense.
Plus, and I wrote this, and I get that it's an entirely different defense. I understand. But the Packers couldn't beat Jimmy Garoppolo with Aaron Rodgers.
Right. He's like their Achilles heel.
Yeah, it's not hard to see them losing to Jimmy Garoppolo with Jordan Love. But, I think it's that game just – you know, in basketball, like Kobe or MJ or LeBron, Steph Curry, like whoever they play, some games you just know that however many points they give up, those guys are going to score more. I feel that way about Devontae Adams in this game. However the Packers offense does, somehow Devontae Adams is going to find a way to get more yards.
Right. And then after that Monday night game, they have a bye. Ryan, any other team, I would look at this schedule and go – they go from a Thursday to a Monday, so they have a mini bye, and then they have a bye, and then they play Denver. If the bye had not been right there, they probably would have just stayed out west. You know, sometimes teams will do that. Found a college to work out there, and then go from the Raiders to the Broncos. Any other team, I would say that bye is almost too early. You wouldn't need it at that point. But with this team and a new quarterback, a first-time quarterback, is that – fortuitous to have that bye right there in week 6.
That's a great point. I've had several thoughts on the bye. That's one I hadn't had, but that's a great point that it gives more breathing room early in this first season for Jordan Love. Not necessarily more practice reps, but more breathing room, a little slower pace, which probably doesn't hurt. I think the NFL schedule makers gave the Packers a big favor with this week 6 bye. Not just because, imagine where we might be right now if the Packers had a week 6 bye last year. And that was when Matt LaFleur looked back in retrospect, that was a big regret of his. He had the option after that week 5 game last year in London against the Giants to take a week 6 bye coming back from Europe. And understandably, when you think about the thought process, that he expected this team to be a Super Bowl contender. A week 6 bye is awfully early. For a veteran roster, having a late season bye, getting a week to rest up for the stretch run that you expect to be in and you expect to be pushing for a Super Bowl, the thought process made sense, except they were not a contender. They were 8-9. They didn't make the playoffs. And Aaron Rodgers broke his thumb on his throwing hand on the final play in London, which if you have that week 6 bye, you give him a chance to rest that thumb. Who knows where we're at right now? Maybe the same place. Very possibly it's still Jordan Love's team. But who knows? It's fascinating to me that they have a week 6 bye a year later. But from a travel standpoint, their two longest trips are Las Vegas and Denver. And so it's not a bad thing to get a week off between those 2-3-hour flights. So, I think it's certainly, both being on the road, it's a fortuitous bye for them.
So, yes, then, as you said, after the bye, they go to Denver. It's a 3:25 game. In Denver, it would be 2:25. Wait, what time zone is Denver in? 2:25.
Yep.
Yes. Maybe I'm just, like, not giving Russell Wilson enough credit. In your mind, was that one of those other quarterback duel games or looking at the Broncos defense games?
Yeah, I broke my rule on this one. All this talk about it's about the Jordan Love versus the defense. That's a very good Broncos defense. And that is just a broken quarterback that they have in Russell Wilson. Maybe Sean Payton makes a difference, quite possibly. But I don't feel all that confident expecting it. So I have the Packers winning that game because I think Jordan Love's going to be the best quarterback on the field.
Yeah, same. And then they come home and they play the Vikings at noon on Sunday. So you said you split them and you gave them the home wins in the NFC North.
Yep, I have them beating the Lions week four at home. I have them beating the Vikings at home.
Yes, and then they have a game, another noon game the following week versus the Rams. The poor Rams. This is 3 years in a row they've had to come visit Lambeau Field in November or December. Mm-hmm. I saw that they actually petitioned the NFL to have that game changed and were denied. But that's just, I guess, the luck of the draw for the Rams 3 years in a row to have to make that trip. Because of that and because of how the other games have turned out, I think they win that Rams game as well.
I do as well. You know, the Rams kind of profile as one of those teams. Who knows? Maybe they're due for a bounce back. I just don't expect it. Mm-hmm. I think when you take the big picture view of the schedule, and this is how NFL teams view it as well. They split their schedules into quarters. And it's not as clean as it used to be with 16 games because 17 doesn't perfectly divide into quarters. But I think you can do that with this schedule. Like the first four games, 2-2, home and road. Two on the road, two at home. All those games are winnable. And then you kind of get into this other phase, the second phase, where it's at Vegas, at Denver, and then Vikings at home, and you've got the Rams, and then at Pittsburgh. Those five games mm-hmm. are all winnable. It doesn't mean that they will. In fact, they probably won't win all five. But those are all winnable games. And that's kind mm-hmm. of the soft spot of the schedule. And then it gets into that third quarter,
yes.
which we'll get into, which is the real meat of the meat grinder of the schedule. But as far as the Rams go, that's a game that they should win. And then the next week, Cassie, I think that game at Pittsburgh is one of the – if they want to contend for a playoff spot, potentially for a division title in a wide-open NFC North, I think that game at Pittsburgh is a real pivotal game. Because on one hand, that's not a great Steelers team. You could – Jordan Love might be better than Kenny Pickett. It's very possible. On the other hand, it's a solid – Steelers defense. Right. And Heinz Field is never an easy place to play. It's just no matter who you are, no matter what time the kickoff is, even in this case, it's a noon kickoff. Mm-hmm. Even still, it is a difficult road environment. So that to me is a very pivotal game. I have them losing that game because of the environment, decent defense. They could very well win that game. That stands out as one of the more pivotal, more important games of their year if they want to contend for a playoff spot.
Right. I think that's a very good point. They have that Pittsburgh game, and then they come home and face the Chargers. I have those as a toss-up. I think they split those, and I couldn't tell you which one they win and which one they lose.
See, I think the Chargers at home opens that third phase, which those next four games, the Chargers at home, Lions on Thanksgiving, Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes at home, and then at the Giants. I have them losing all four of those games.
Yeah,
I think that is a brutal stretch. The brutal stretch on this schedule for them. I don't see Jordan Love being able to best Justin Herbert, whether that's in Los Angeles, Green Bay, Mars. Justin Herbert is a stud, and even amplify that 2 weeks later with Patrick Mahomes. That to me, if they can survive that four game stretch, then contending for a playoff spot and NFC North division title becomes very, very real, because everything else around that four game stretch is looks quite soft, except for those four games.
Yeah, I say I had them losing them all too, and then I had also said the Chargers could be a toss up. But yes, that is a difficult stretch, especially. Keep in mind, too, the Chargers to the Lions I think originally I had said I think they win that Lions game. But looking at it now, I'm changing my mind, because that's a short week. That's a short turnaround, because that Lions game is on Thanksgiving. And then they come home versus the Chiefs. Like you said, go to the Giants. That's a tough stretch. just from a mentality standpoint too.
And the Lions are going to be up on Thanksgiving against the Packers. That is their Super Bowl every year. They're getting the Packers on Thanksgiving for the first time in a decade. Not to say the Packers won't be up too, but you got a short week travel on Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. It's not the same when you get, you know, when you're the Lions, you get to host your division rival, your big brother at home on Thanksgiving. It's an entirely different thing.
Yeah. But then their last four games, if they're going to make a playoff run, that's where they can sort of get back into the mix. They face Tampa at home on Sunday in a noon game.
That's a win.
Christmas Eve, they go play the Panthers, and we'll come back to that game in particular. New Year's Eve, they will play the Vikings in Minneapolis, and then they come home for the finale against the Bears. I can see them easily going 3-1 during that stretch. The Panthers is a little bit of a wild card because we don't know what Bryce Young will be.
Yeah.
We don't know what that team will be around him.
And we don't know what Jordan Love will be either.
That's true.
And it's late in the season. And so both of those first-time starting quarterbacks have had a lot of time to develop, and how that development goes probably ultimately determines that game. I've got them winning that game. I think that it's still an advantage, even late in the season, being a rookie versus being a guy that's in your fourth season, has had a lot of time to develop to the NFL and your playbook, your offense. But we don't know what Bryce Young's going to be, and we don't know what Jordan Love's going to be either. It's going to be a very fascinating quarterback matchup.
And that final four games, that final stretch, is usually where the Packers defense decides to, like, flip a switch all of a sudden. And so I think they see a rookie quarterback and they tee up in that game. And that final stretch. I could see this team going 9-8 and sneaking in as a wild card.
Or a division title. I think nine wins could win the NFC North. I had them 8-9. Same record as last year. Didn't do that on purpose, just how it played out. It could, you know, if they win at Pittsburgh, it could be 9. If they win in Chicago, it could be 10. But they could also, and here's the thing with Jordan Love. This is not a knock on Jordan Love. This is the reality of any first-year starting quarterback. Jordan Love is going to lose them games because first-year starting quarterbacks, they learn by losing. That's the process they go under. And so which games that we see that that's pretty soft, they should win that game. They're not going to win every single game that seems winnable. It's just not going to happen. So I can see them winning 9-10. I could also see them winning 6 or 7.
Right. They could very easily go 7-10.
Yeah.
Now that we've sat here and said all of this. But we will look forward to continuing to speculate from now up until the beginning of the season. And then let's, not that this matters as much, but let's see who they get for the preseason again. I want to say Bengals, Patriots, Seahawks. Yes.
That's they correct. Only have one. Cincinnati.
Do what?
That's correct. At Cincinnati.
And then come home for those Patriots and Seahawks. Those are some good tune-up games. We're used to seeing Jordan Love in the preseason and the starting quarterback sitting. In this case, do we see Jordan Love in the preseason just to get him more reps and get ready?
There's no question he's going to play. He's probably going to play a lot. I don't know how much he plays in the third preseason game. But, yes, this is going to be a very different preseason than what they've had under Aaron Rodgers for the last several years.
Right. Well, as I said, we will have plenty of time to speculate between now and then. We got a little bit of a downtime here. As I said before, OTAs start back up next week, and we will have full coverage for you from there as well. Ryan, your final 60 seconds. Take it. Go for it.
I am going to spend my downtime by trying to unplug a little bit. Obviously, we got the OTAs coming up, but just kind of taking it easy, enjoying life at 36, and not watching much of the Mets because
I was about to say, y'all notice he didn't mention the Mets because poor team.
I'll own it. Not happy about it, but I'll own it.
They're below 500. They're
just not fun to watch, Cassidy. Not happy.
I know. At least my team's fun to watch. I think they're floating right around 500 too. But they
finally just wait till the Mets get Shohei Ohtani next year.
Oh, my team is 26-15. Whoops.
We had that argument over the weekend, and our good friend.
That's not going to happen. He's not going to the Cubs.
Our good friend Kyle Mozon, major Cubs fan with WFRV, is just delusional and completely convinced that the Cubs are going to land Shohei Ohtani. And you're a Dodgers fan. I'm a Mets fan. And you and I are like, look, I can say that Shohei Ohtani might go to the Dodgers. You can say he might go to the Mets. Those are kind of the two teams.
Both feasible options.
We both know he's not going to the Cubs.
Right.
So that's how I'm using my final 60 seconds to out Kyle Mozon. Say, dude, come back to reality.
When he signs with the Cubs next year, Kyle's going to want to come on this podcast and take a victory lap around us. And you know what?
It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I know. We can
extend the invitation now because we know that that's not happening.
Oh, we're going to be embarrassed if it does. But it's not. Anyways.
Confident.
We will be back with you next week, as I said, for OTAs. We've still got some stuff going on, so make sure to check PackersNews.com, especially as some of these roster signings get in. I believe they have four more of their draft class still to sign, the Packers do. So when that happens, we'll have it updated for you as well on PackersNews.com. So stay tuned for more coverage, and then as we get geared up for OTAs. Ryan, thank you as always. We'll see you next time. This has been the Green 19 Podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com.